Afternoon, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to remind all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thanks, Glenn. We're going to try something new and await howls of protest. We're going to skip the roll call because the list is so long that it will take quite a while, and besides, people are still joining. So instead, what we'll do, we still record who's on the call from meeting view, but we're just not going to read off the names. And if anybody is really uncomfortable with that, let me know, and we'll reinstall roll call next time. But it just seemed easier that way. So we're on to reviewing and approving the agenda, and thanks to all of you for putting up with the sort of flurry of activity on the list right at the end there. This is standard Mikey O'Connor last-minute improvisation, but I think it's going to go really well. Two questions for all. First question is, are there any other business items that people would like to add to the end of the agenda? And the second question is there anything that the folks would like to change about the agenda? I'll look for hands in Adobe. If you're not on Adobe, feel free to just chime in on the phone call. Any thoughts about the agenda, or are we good on that? I'm going to take that we're good, which is neat because that means that we've got a little bit of extra time. We've got about 15 more minutes from any other business item at the end that we can use on the proposals. And without further ado, I think we'll jump right into the proposals. I want to do a little level setting before we start off. First off, many thanks to Eric for getting jerked around by your co-chair and permitting himself to be bumped unceremoniously to next week. But I think that it's easier if folks have had a chance to look at the proposal for a bit, and so it's nice that Eric acquiesced to my sudden course change there. Second point is for the three folks who are presenting, hats off to all three of you for essentially plunging into the unknown. We don't really know how this is going to go, and so my thought for the rest of the group is that what we're really about is trying to figure out whether we can put together some proposals that will go the distance all the way to getting approved by the board and into the applicant guidebook. And so to the extent that we can refrain from reliving old battles, refighting old fights, and sort of constructively work to refine and improve these proposals, I think we stand a better chance of success. And again, kudos to the three of you for taking this on, and admonishments to the rest of us that, let's try and help put together proposals that eventually we can get the consensus on. Beyond that, I don't have much in the way of structure, guidelines, or anything. So whichever of the three of you would like to go first, you're up, and we'll go through the three proposals together and then talk a little bit about the use case stuff, talk a little bit about analysis process, and then wrap up. Anybody want to go first? Blage, you got your hand up. Go.
All I wanted to say there is Milton, Avery, and I are working on a refined proposal based upon the original submission prior to Seoul.
Okay.
We were not able to resolve some of the wording prior to this call, so if we could just be put in the queue for next week with Eric, we would appreciate that, and we'll try to have that proposal out within the next 24 to 48 hours. Okay?
That's fine. And in fact, just to clarify, my main objective for the use case stuff is mostly to just kick off a subgroup What I was thinking is that since the three of you and Barry are kind of running down similar tracks, maybe the four of you would like to merge your efforts. And so we can talk about that. I wasn't actually planning to review the contents of the proposals today because they're so huge that there's no way we could get through them. So you're off the hook there.
All right. Put it this way. We will work with Barry on the use cases. And as I said, Avery, Milton, and I are working on a, if you will, a fourth or a fifth proposal. So we will work on
both of those
going forward.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I didn't understand. Another proposal. Great. Okay. Who wants to go first, or shall I just pick somebody at random?
Mikey, this is John. If I could defer, because my proposal will incorporate some of the other two, I'd rather go third, if that's okay.
That's fine.
This is Jeff Newman. I guess I can go first. It doesn't really matter, unless Jeff Eckhouse wants.
No, I defer to you. Go ahead. You submitted yours first. Might as well go in that order.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for giving me some time to talk about the proposal. And I see it's now up on Adobe. So you skip through the pleasantries, or as Eric referred to it, I'm not sure how Eric referred to it. But anyway, and really what I want to jump to is Section B, which is after the definitions. The definitions are actually pretty key, but absent talking about the principles, I think that's one of the most important parts. A little bit of background. So this does look a little bit like the registry stakeholder group proposal, but there are some key differences. The registry stakeholder group proposal, there was a reference to all of the restrictions that would apply to the registry operator also applying to the back-end operator, whereas in this round what we've done is if there's truly a back-end registry operator that's unaffiliated with – I'm sorry, if there's a back-end registry service provider that's truly affiliated with the that's not affiliated with the registry operator – then they will be allowed to operate both the back end and the a registrar. So there are, that is a key difference between the registry stakeholder group proposal and NewSTARS. So the restrictions aren't quite as broad as they were in the stakeholder group proposal. There are some other differences, and we'll go through them as well. And one of the differences, and I have not read John's new proposal yet or fully read Jeff Eckhouse's, although Jeff and I did talk a little bit about it on Friday. So one of the things here that's really important in this proposal is that currently under the existing regime, under the existing restrictions, there's a loophole. There's several loopholes that even though it's registry-registrar separation, there are loopholes that do not apply to affiliates of the registry operator, meaning in the ICANN agreements, the registry operator is just the entity that actually signs the contract with ICANN. But there's nothing prohibiting affiliates from getting around all of the restrictions, at least in a contract. Now, I will say, though, in practice, there are restrictions from there are actually restrictions in there because the main, or I should say the largest unsponsored registries, the VeriSign, the Filius, NewSTAR, and others, actually do have in practice these restrictions, even though it's not in writing. And I could explain that further if there are questions. But essentially, Filius, NewSTAR, and VeriSign are all back-end providers, and they're also front-end providers. And by virtue of them being front-end providers, the restrictions do retroactively apply to their back-end business. And again, I could take everyone through that, but not on this call. So quickly, the principles are that a registry operator or its affiliate may serve as an ICANN accredited registrar in any top-level domain other than the TLD for which the registry operator or its affiliate serves as the registry operator. There's a definition of affiliation. This is a little bit different than some other ideas that have been floated about where affiliation in, for example, Richard Tindall had presented a model back way back when that affiliation only meant legal ownership, but that's really inadequate. Affiliation in any legal context usually refers to ownership as one element, but also control, and control is either, again, legal control or control by contract. And that is a key loophole, and that is something that definitely needs to be considered by this group, that we need to create rules that are as best as possible not subject to gaming. So to the extent we know about gaming in advance, we need to prohibit that. Number two is that neither registry operator or its affiliates may serve as a registrar in the TLD unless, and there's two exceptions in there, the single registrant TLD or the community-based TLD, provided that in a community-based TLD, and then we have a certain number of registrations in there. Those are all some stuff that needs to be clarified, needs to be discussed as to how you define the single registrant TLD. And, you know, I know there's some good discussions going back and forth. For community-based TLD, we just use the definition that's actually in the guidebook now. And also for registry services, we use the current definition that's in the guidebook. But, again, we can discuss those if you want to discuss those. Point three is that registry operator must use only ICANN-accredited registrars in registering domain names, provided that registry operator shall have the flexibility to determine eligibility criteria for registrars. And also the proviso at the end is that such criteria should be applied to all ICANN-accredited registrars. In other words, the criteria set by the registry cannot be, I will only have registrars located, the registrars that start with the letter E that are located in Washington, the state of Washington, United States. So there's got to be some rational basis for criteria, and it needs to be equally applied to all registrars. So number four is actually kind of a key point in this proposal, which is that if you are a registry service provider, meaning the back-end registry that's either providing shared registration services, DNS services, Whois services, or a combination of any of those three, then these rules will apply. And the first rule is that if the RSP actually controls, and you go back to the definition to see what that means, but if they control pricing, policy, or the selection of registrars, then the same restrictions that apply to the registry operator should apply to the RSP as well. Again, there is rationale behind that. We can go through that later if there are questions. In addition, in the event the RSP or its affiliates is a registrar for the TLD, we put in six requirements in there to make sure that they're not taking advantage of their dual role as being a back-end provider and being a registrar. And, you know, the first one deals with not receiving preferential pricing. Two is for data restrictions and a firewall that's set up. That addresses some of the registry stakeholder group concerns about data being misused. Number three is no confidential information of the registry operator obtained by the RSP may be shared with the registrar affiliate of the RSP except as necessary to perform the services. And four is that the registry service provider shall not provide any access to any registry data to its affiliate, to its registrar affiliate, and RSP itself will not use that data except as necessary for basically performing their services. Then in number five is actually an audit that should be done by an independent auditor that should be paid for by the RSP, the registry service provider, to make sure that these data rules are being followed. And six is really, again, kind of a placeholder, but it's that there needs to be strict penalties or sanctions to apply to any entity or its family that are violating these policies. And I just recommended to go back to the old Appendix Y of the COM agreement to see what kind of sanctions you could actually apply. And the last principle in there is that the registry operator shall have the ability to set up their criteria for registrars at its sole discretion, provided that they're reasonable. So that kind of relates to another criteria that's above there. I'm looking at some of the chat room comments, trying to see if there's anything I should respond to in there. Let's see, Anthony doesn't agree to a limit, so we could talk about that. And let's see. So, okay, I guess that's The reason we did the limit of 30,000 for the community is that in each of the examples we have to date, and again, we're using the examples we have to date. I know some of you say, well, this new round's going to be completely different, so we can't look at the past. But you know what? In order to create rules, you kind of have to look at the past to predict the future. And in the past, any truly community-based TLDs, and I'm not talking about some of the looser sponsored ones like Moby, but really community ones that we hear about like .cat and others, they really do not exceed at this point 30,000 registrations. So that's kind of where we got that a number from. Again, so Eric says it's 40,000 now. You know, look, we're not dead set on that number. It was just a straw man to throw it out there. So I'd be happy to take any questions. Apparently, Eric and Brian have questions. So let me turn it over.
Thanks, Jeff. Let me run the queue. Eric's been very patient, and Brian's in the queue. We've got, according to my vicious clock, we've got about 5 more minutes to go on this. And so as people are starting to say, well, what the heck? How can we ever get this done? I've got an idea, but I want to sort of get a feel for these conversations before I propose it. So let's see what we can fit into 5 minutes, and then we'll take it from there. Eric, you go first.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep, hear you fine.
Good. Jeff, I'd be entirely happy if my questions that I emailed to you were responded to. I don't see a need to take up voice time in talking them through. They're entirely adequately addressed by email. I think that's the only comment I had. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. I will respond to those. I just haven't had a chance yet, but it will certainly respond to those.
And you know, I think I'm going to start feeding my idea in, which is that I think what we are going to find is that there's really no way to get substantive work done on these calls except at this very high level. And that what people ought to start thinking about is forming around Jeff. If you're interested in this proposal and you think it has merit but it needs tuning, start thinking about sort of volunteering to be part of the subgroup that hammers away on this. And then for Jeff, what I would do is hunt in the group for people who seem very opposed to your idea and try and recruit them into the subgroup as well so that you can, you know, maybe address their concerns too. But let's get going and see how it goes.
Mikey, if I could just add, I think, and I'll leave to Eckhouse and John Nevitt, but our proposals have a lot of common elements, so it may be one subgroup that that attacks all three of those proposals. But I'll leave that to the end.
Okay. Brian, go.
Yeah, Jeff, if you just – sorry, I was trying to play catch-up during your presentation. You said that in one spot the proposal fundamentally differs from the registry stakeholder group supermajority position. Could you just re-articulate that, please? And then if you could speak to, in principle number two, the 30,000 threshold and where that came from.
Yeah, so the first question real quick is the fundamental difference is that this proposal does not apply to the registry stakeholder group proposal had basically set the strict separation that applied equally to all back-end service providers as well as to registry operators. And the registry stakeholder group also applied to resellers of registrars. So all the restrictions on the registrars would apply to the resellers. In the spirit of compromise, we have come off of that a little bit, but in its place have put in some strict rules to make sure that data is, you know, that the data abuses that the registry is worried about are don't occur, and so that there's a firewall between them. So there are things that are put in its place, but not an absolute prohibition on back-end operators being affiliated with registrars. The 30,000, again, was the thought of responding to some of the comments that thought 50,000 was too high in the registry stakeholder group. I went back sort of as to what the registrations were in most of the truly community-based TLDs, and it seems like, I guess, CAT has over 40,000, but 30,000 was what we had understood. But even if CAT has 40,000, you know, three-fourths of those are would be there would be allowed to be registrar integration or ownership for up to 30,000 of those names. Again, it's up for discussion. Can certainly work on what that number should be.
This is Mikey. I'm going to start enforcing time. We're real close to the end here. Tom, real quick, and Amadeo, real quick, and then we'll move on to the next chunk.
Yeah, I have a comment about using the term single registrant TLD. A registrant is very specific to how ICANN works today, and in particular, one of the four Whois contacts listed for a domain name. So I wonder if, for example, .Facebook or .Twitter, where they listed themselves as the sole registrant, if that was intended here, even though they might have millions of consumers using their service, or in fact we're talking about single user TLD. And to further on from that, is single registrant TLD mutually exclusive from a community-based TLD, or in fact, could those be one and the same?
I think those are great questions. I know that work needs to be done on the single registrant TLD. Won't go through that example because I think my view may differ from others in this group, but that's certainly one thing that I would encourage the subgroup to work on. And can there be overlap? Sure, but let's work on that in the subgroup.
Okay, Amadeo, you're next.
Okay, I have a short question for Mikey and a comment for Jeff. First, the comment. Without going into the merits of each concrete proposal or principle, and many of them I agree, and some of them I have partial disagreements, there is something that you said that worries me. I completely agree whether you should have better definitions of control. It's not just ownership if we talk about separation. The problem is I don't think that this group can provide for legally sounding contractual definitions of what's control here. We have a long tradition in corporate law in Europe, United States. We have a long tradition in antitrust law on defining these things in the stock market regulations, and I don't think we can do that. We should set the principles as you do here, but probably the language should be left to ICANN counsel and advisors for the DAC and not being discussed in this group. The question to Mikey is, it's been holidays for some of us for these days, and following the working was very difficult. Are we still in time to send at least a skeleton of some complementary proposals in the next 3 days?
Oh, absolutely. I should have clarified that. My guess is that we will see more proposals coming in over the next several weeks. And my thought was that this is essentially a chance for people to showcase their proposal, recruit people to help them refine it, both advocates and adversaries, and that at some point in several weeks we would draw a close to proposals. But by no means did I mean to imply that. We're gonna all need to mute. We're getting an awful lot of lines on the line.
So
everybody, take a look at your phone and make sure that you're muted.
Mikey, can I just address Amadeo's point real quick, and then we can go on to the next
sure.
one?
Yeah,
Amadeo, I agree with you that the exact legal language should be left to staff to implement. I would just say that we can agree on principles. So if, for example, we believe that control should apply to both ownership and other types of control that are indirect, like by contract, I think that could be worked on by the group and from a principle standpoint, but the exact language, sure, should be left to the lawyers.
Brian, I'll violate my own rule. You get to speak, but very quickly, and then we're going to go on to the next. Oh, he's got it. Okay. Jeffrey, many thanks. Any and all who want to help Jeffrey refine his proposal, we heard a little bit of conversation about this on the call. By all means, join Jeffrey in that effort. Jeffrey, if you need anything from me in terms of recruiting other people, let me know, and we're going to go on to Jeff Eckhouse, I think, is next, right?
Okay, thanks. So I was, the way I was planning on doing this, I think Jeff Newman, since he went through, and as we, as I think he's pointed out, and I think John Nevitt pointed out in the email, there are a lot of similarities between the proposals. So I was just going to go through a few points on mine, and then I thought maybe just open it up to some questions or comments, if that's okay with everyone, instead of just reading through it line by line. So I think the point, my proposal should be coming up. I think I'm just waiting for it. It should be coming up on Adobe in a second here. Okay, there it is. Okay, so I guess what I wanted to do was just to discuss, you know, some of the ideas and why I put this together. And I think that, you know, part of what we have in place right now is all based on, you know, the VeriSign, what happened in .com, and our mentality is still, you know, rooted in that, which is understandably so. But I think that my thought was, we're going to have a whole new marketplace, a whole new world, really, for TLDs. And what I wanted to do is to open it up so that we can have a competitive marketplace in these new TLDs and actually make this, I guess you could call it this business or this environment, pretty much similar to every other business environment out there where there are no major restrictions to who can be a seller, who cannot sell, if there's co-ownership or vertical integration. And that's sort of what I wanted to, that's the idea in my proposal. So I'll just start off that, so my part, I didn't go through the definitions on mine, so if people do have questions, let me know on the definitions on here. So I didn't separate between a registry service provider, which I guess would be the back-end operator, and the registry, which is the person who has the contract with ICANN. So in my model, it's basically, it's an open, it's a two-way street open to both sides. A registry can purchase, own, affiliate with a registrar. No ownership limits, no percentages in place. And the same way a registrar can purchase, own, affiliate with a registry. There are no limits on percentage of ownership. As I said, I have not seen why any of the numbers like 15% make sense or why any of these percentages make sense besides if we're going to do it, let's go through with 100% ownership. As I said, I wanted to open this up so all of these rules would apply to new GTLDs only. So it doesn't matter if you're an existing registry or if you're a new guy. In new TLDs, everybody works under these same rules. You know, I think if you have questions on here, I think with the single registrant, I guess I was going to clarify it, but I think Richard Tindall did a great job with clarifying this on his email last night, which is whoever is in the who is, that is the registrant, and that is the point of contact, and that would be a single registrant. If there's other users, that's not really our concern because right now there are people who sell and use third-level domain registrations, and those people are not in the who is. And whoever is the main contact and the main person needs to be reached for that domain, then that is the single registrant. So that hopefully that clarifies a little bit of that. I'm just sort of wasn't prepared to go through a presentation, so if I'm sort of jumbled, let me know, and I'll go back to it. And I think one of my main points, I think, I'm not sure if Jeff Newman had this in his, I have to remember, but if there is a single registrant, then that entity, I guess the main difference, does not have to offer equal access to people. And that my example would be IBM. But they would need to be either use an ICANN accredited registrar, they can set up a deal with an ICANN accredited registrar, or they would need to agree to the terms of the RAA, so they would themselves become a registrar. So I think, you know, instead of rambling on through here, I guess maybe I would just open this up to questions on here because I think, instead of reading it through, I think we have similar protections. There are some slight differences between Jeff and mine, and I think mine are
I'm very open to some additional work or some additional comments on the safeguards and the conditions. I just threw those out there, you know, the first violation, second violation, the 30 days, 90 days. Those are mostly placeholders. And the other area, I think I would love some help on this from the registries on my point on the may not share confidential information. I have some idea of what the confidential information, but I've still had some issues on what this this data that people could share that's going to give a huge edge. I would love to find that out from the registries and the people that are very concerned about this data sharing, and I would add that into the proposal on what those specifics are, because I still haven't been able to figure out what is that incredible use, you know, that secret data that would give somebody an unbelievable edge. But whatever it is, if people are concerned about it, I'm willing to have a separation, have people audit that separation is happening, and make sure that it's in effect. And, oh, the last thing, I was a little concerned, of course, about talking about pricing. I know it's always, you know, at least with the registrars, we're very, you know, we don't ever talk about pricing. So one of the things I wanted to discuss was just the fee structure, which I addressed, is that the integrated entity would pay ICANN some sort of reduced fee for each domain, which is less than the current sum of the per domain registry fee plus the registrar fee. I'm not an expert in this, but if we're not allowed to talk about this or not allowed to propose it, please let me know and I'll drop that. But that was one of my proposals, because I didn't think it was right or a good idea that there would be each person would pay the independent fee, which I'm even scared to say the current amounts. But I don't know if some of the people who are the experts on what can be spoken about in a working group or not will let me know. And I think I'll just end it there and open it up to some questions or comments, and I'll sort of read through the list over here and see if there's anything directly addressed to me.
Thanks, Jeff. Tim's in the queue. Others can get in the queue. We have on this 15-minute segment about 5 more minutes to go. So, Tim, you're next.
Thanks, Mikey. It's not a question just directly for Jeff and his proposal, just kind of in general, because we keep, you know, and another issue I guess I want to raise about the single entity TLD as we try to define that and things we should be thinking about. But, you know, we keep saying a single registrant, and in my mind, it isn't just a matter of who's the listed registrant, it's the use that's important as well. So, for example, if a major car brand wanted its own TLD, you know, .BMW or .Volvo or whatever it might be, and they were the registrant and of the second-level names for various brands of their cars, and those were websites they operated to promote and market, you know, the brands of their cars. You know, that's one thing. However, if they are the single registrant, but they're allowing those names to be used by vendors, employees, or other third parties, regardless of who the registrant is, I think that's a different issue. So I don't know, Richard didn't really go into that kind of detail, but I wanted to add that specific aspect to it. So it's not just the listed registrant and who is, it's actually the use of those names I think that's important to look at.
Okay, Mike, do you mind if I answer that and address that?
Go ahead. Sure.
Okay, thanks. So, you know, Tim, I agree with you, and I sort of think about, I guess if I could draw a parallel, it would be, you know, were there issues or what was in place with, I forgot, you know, I don't remember how long ago this was, but when all the shared hosting environments came out and you can get, you know, it would be, say, like timruiz.homestead.com or something, some of those, if somebody remembers the year and how those worked. But for something like that, it was Homestead was the main user and the registrant, and they were ultimately responsible for what was on the third-level name. So that was sort of the parallel I was thinking about, is that the person who had the domain and who the registrant was the one that's ultimately responsible for policing what's on those sites and is the one who would receive the UDRPs, the URS, all that information. And I think that we didn't, you know, we didn't, I guess ICANN or other people here weren't addressing what happened on those third levels with that shared hosting. So I didn't think it would be any different on the single registrant that TLDs, because that person would still be responsible and have to receive it.
Okay. Mike Palage is next.
Thanks, Mikey. Jeff, to address your concerns about the pricing, and again, I'm sensitive to that, I actually raised this question through the comment period that recently closed in connection with the budget, because historically ICANN used to operate on a cost recovery basis. So, you know, if you go back pre-Toomey, your concerns were actually addressed. Unfortunately, the billing system, the tax and spend billing system that Toomey put in place during his reign, unfortunately leads to the disparity in ICANN's billing system. So just to raise your question of how we may address that, I've already raised that issue in another fora. And with regard to Tim's question about determining the registrant, perhaps what you may want to look at is the use of the term beneficial registrant. That may be another concept you may want to do. They're my only comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. We're down to about a minute left. Amadeo, you're next.
Okay. One question here. We keep talking about, you know, the single registrant and these categories, and the problem is not categories. As Tim has said, this is about use. There are two different questions here. One question is vertical integration or not, and this is a question about competition and the market. I think a different question is, in some extreme cases, using ICANN-rated registers and having competing registers does not make sense. That could be .museum or .amadeo Web Real, but that's a different question than competition. It's a question about, you know, how we use this artificial creation of ICANN-rated registers or not in a concrete situation. So we better separate both things, the general rule on whether we need competition or not, whether it's a market, etc. And second thing, whether we have some exceptions on the fringes or not.
Mikey, it's Thanks. Jeff Eckhouse. Can I respond to that for a sec?
Sure.
Okay, so I think I addressed this in my proposal, and I don't think, you know, I don't know, I've said this a few times, I am not on my proposal, and probably some of the other registrars might be, not happy with this, but the whole point was you do not need to use an ICANN accredited, you don't have to choose another ICANN accredited registrar. If that single entity is bound by the terms of the RAA, they can be a registrar themselves. And I think that the RAA, I mean, I sent a link to it, to this list, offers a lot of protections to consumers. You know, a lot of people in these working groups and other things want to be, you know, people want to actually be, want to negotiate these for themselves because they're so concerned about what's going to be in the RAA, because it protects consumers and it's very important to them. So I think that being bound by those terms of the RAA for this single entity is something that's important for consumers, registrants, and it is, I don't know why we would change that and what the reasoning is why that single entity couldn't be bound by the RAA.
Okay, we're a little bit over time. Jeff Newman.
Yeah, I'll make it quick. And
go
actually,
quick, and Jeff Eckhouse, respond quick, and then we'll move on to John.
Well, I think Jeff Eckhouse gave good transition to me, because I got to say the RAA is irrelevant to a lot of the single registrant TLDs. The consumer protections that the RAA has in there are basically meaningless for a truly single registrant TLD. You know, who cares about, transfer rules, for example, if a domain name can't be transferred? Who cares about the who is rules if it's only one registrant that's the contact for everything? And I sent around another email that basically analyzes that. It's funny how the registrars are all now touting the RAA and what a great, wonderful masterpiece it is, yet when people try to change it, It meets a lot of resistance when people try to change it to benefit consumers. So I think with the single registrant TLD, let me just again say on record that the RAA, is if it's truly a single registrant as I envision it, it's basically meaningless. So that's all.
Wait, Mikey, 2-second response to that. It's Jeff. Just want to say, if it doesn't apply and it's not, and it doesn't concern the single registrant, then why would that single entity have a problem with signing it? They could just say, I'm signing it, it doesn't really apply to me, but if I'm not going to transfer names, it doesn't ask them to do anything else. But then again, I am willing to say, hey, if it's a single entity and you're never going to change, then we might have a, let's call it an RAA light or something like that. I'd be open to that discussion as well.
Okay, I'm going to draw a line under this one. Amadeo, I know you're in there in the queue again, but...
No, I'm not. I'm trying to just to get off, but I have some problems with the Flash plugging with my browser. Sorry.
Okay. No worries. Let's see. John, it's your turn. You've got 15 minutes from now, so by my arithmetic, that would be until 58.
Great. Thanks, Mikey.
So 2 minutes away from the top of the hour. Call it the top of the hour.
Okay. Hopefully it won't take that long. Essentially, what I had proposed was hearing calls for status quo in the community and hearing other calls for other changes to the vertical integration and cross-ownership requirements. I looked at contracts that are existing and tried to find the ones that met the greatest number of folks. So what I pulled out and what I originally sent out a week or so ago was the .mobi language. And then I sent around today, folks probably haven't had a chance to see it, but I tried to mirror what Newman and Jeff Eckhouse sent out and show where the .mobi language or the STLD round, so Mobi, Tel, Asia, where those contracts and those requirements are comparable to some of the proposals that are already out there. So I pulled out some of those principles that Jeff Newman had talked about, and I listed it out in the email I sent. The first one is use of ICANN accredited registrars, that's in the .mobi language or the STLD language, and is consistent with what Neustar proposed and Demand proposed. Then the additional point in number one is that registry operator can use objective criteria to come up with the eligibility requirements for registrars. So they don't have to use all 900 registrars or 200 families or whatever it is. They could set up criteria saying, you know, based on different characteristics of registrars, who they want to use, which they want to use, and that is consistent with what's currently in existence in the STLD contracts as well as in the Neustar and Demand proposals. That criteria is at the registry's discretion, but they have to use reasonable actions related to using that ability to select which registrars they want to use. So that's number two. Number three is they can't discriminate among the registrars they do select. So that brings into existence the recommendation from the GNSO, recommendation 19. Again, that's all in the STLD contracts as they exist now and in the Neustar and Demand proposals. So those first three are still consistent. And then registry operator may serve as an ICANN accredited registrar in any TLD that it's not the registry operator for. That's consistent with the Neustar and Demand proposals. So my top four are all consistent right now with the three proposals that you're hearing today. Obviously, we haven't seen Eric's or Mike's and Aubrey's and Milton's, but at least those first four are all consistent. We're all on the same page on those. And then I tried to look at the framework of the STLD contracts, which say, you know, the general rule is you can't have more than 15%. A registry operator can't have more than 15% of an ICANN accredited registrar, but the STLD contracts say that ICANN can approve that if you want to have more than 15%, it's subject to ICANN approval. and then we would look at adding a list of specifications. I recommend doing it in two steps. One, in the first 18 to 24 months, I don't care which, but we come up with some kind of contractual requirement in that specification and attach it to the contract. But because I think that this is, and maybe Mike and Jeff would correct me if they think I'm wrong, but I think this is beyond the picket fence in the registry agreement, so it would not be subject to change based on consensus policy. So I would specifically add a provision in this specification that I'm calling Specification X that it can be changed based on a community input and some kind of process, so that we go out the gate into 24 months with a certain set of rules to work, and then we could adapt it based on actual practice. And that would give the opportunity. One thing we've been concerned about for a while, and one thing I had proposed that 100,000 limit way back when, was for the small registry. What happens when the small registry doesn't get traction in the registrar community and they're not finding registrars to sell their names? Sounds like Eric might have a proposal on that. One proposal is, you know, at that point, that registry can start a registrar if they're not getting traction, and that could be one of the criteria that we could look at after 18 to 24 months. So the key is agree on guidelines, and I would look at you know, what Jeff and Jeff recommend and their proposals, and put it in the framework where you're looking at existing language, adapt it to say ICANN can approve it and make it flexible. Because if you're locking this in for a 10-year deal and it's not flexible, you know, we might be regretting that in a year or two.
Okay. If that concludes your remarks, we have about 10 minutes to float questions, et cetera. Anybody want to get in the queue? There's been a fair amount of conversation on the chat. John, if you want to take a minute to scroll backwards through some of that. Not seeing a whole lot of action in the queue.
Yeah, I mean, the key is, you know, maybe I'll ask Mike and Jeff or anyone else who are experts on the picket fence. If we come up with a rule for cross-ownership and vertical integration, would that be subject to consensus policy after we these new registries sign the contracts?
I see Anthony in the queue. If Mike or Jeff want to get in and respond to that question from John, why don't you go ahead? But let's let Anthony get in there first. He hasn't spoken at all today.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I've asked this on the chat a few times, but I didn't get an answer. I would ask it. Can any of the three presenters give a rationale for 15% versus 30% versus 70% versus 100% ownership? I mean, I see these numbers being thrown around as if they have a meaning, and the only meaning that I can discern is that somebody did it before.
I'll happily answer that the same way that you just suggested, which is, people have been very concerned about changing the status of the status quo works, and we've heard a lot of those arguments. So I looked at status quo contracts and said, all right, so the 15% is in there. Let's not tinker with that 15%, but at least give some flexibility to go higher than that, and it's nothing more than that.
And this is Jeff Newman. I'm next in the queue, and I can answer that if you want, Mikey.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my answer to that, Anthony, is, and I said it on the chat, it's all about control. So for me and my proposal, if people adopt the notion of control, then percentage is irrelevant. I'm perfectly willing to drop 15% if we keep in the concept of what it means to control. I think the 15% is an artifact. It's what VeriSign held in Network Solutions at the time. And still actually maintained in Network Solutions. I don't know if they still do or what's going on, but certainly when they divested Network Solutions, they maintained a 15% interest. So it's all about the definition of control.
Just to clarify that, Sean, it's been about 4 years. And VeriSign sold the remaining 15%.
Anthony,
okay.
Does that get you the answer you needed?
Well, I would hope, I mean, it does, and I understand it, but I would hope that we could, instead of just looking at what was customary, which was put into place to address a particular set of circumstances, that we could find something that actually has a rationale that's based on something other than what is customary, or we risk, you know, becoming a fossilized organization. I think we should look at what would work as opposed to what used to work.
Okay. Newman, you're in the queue for something else, right?
Yeah, to answer John's question, I had a question about the picket fence. Whether so at this point, this would be outside the picket fence. In other words, if, for example, we go down one path, we decide that that's not the right path and try to change it by consensus policy, that's at least my interpretation and others I've talked to that would be outside the picket fence. I think even ICANN staff had said that in their issues report. The problem is that if we allow one sort of business model to go forward, and they've spent in the business or even non, and by business model, I don't necessarily mean commercial entity. I'm also talking about non-commercial entity. If you allow one model to go forward and then require a dramatic shift later on, that could really change the economics and the feasibility and just the ability to continue on in that domain. So I don't think I don't think that's something, you know, once you open up the gates or once you let a certain model go, you're almost pretty much stuck with that model.
If I could respond
okay.
to that, I think it's slowing the gate, you know, so not letting the genie out all in one swoop, but, you know, doing it incrementally is what I'm referring to, so that way they have flexibility to be really firm on approvals early and know, so, you know, lock it in for 2 years so people know what, you know, business models are permissible and what which aren't. But flexibility that in 2 years' time, opt in for a 10-year deal, and that could be changed, and it would be to the registry operator's benefit if they're seeking approval.
This is Mikey. We'll take Jeff Eckhouse and Scott, and then we'll draw this one to a close. But I want everybody to look down at your phone and make sure you're on mute.
Okay, thanks. So two things, just very quickly. One, Anthony and mine, I did not have any percentage of ownership because I agree with you 100%. Some of these are just arbitrary, and they're not really, as we said, they're rooted in the past and status quo. And one of the things I think I didn't say in my presentation, but I want to discuss is that everyone says, you know, everyone's concerned about, hey, we need to keep the status quo, the genie out of the, you know, letting the genie out of the bottle, and we have change. I'm still not sure. Why does everyone think the status quo is good? Is, you know, are 7% price increases every year, you know, what we need? I'm not sure, you know, everyone is nostalgic for the way we, you know, we are, but, you know, I haven't seen any benefits to consumers on, you know, price decreases or innovations from the registries. All the innovations have been at the registrar level where there's open competition, not at the registry level. If there is, then please, you know, tell me because I haven't seen it. As a registrar, I see it, you know, I speak with the registries often. I'm still waiting to see what that innovation and what the benefits and why we're so nostalgic to keep the status quo. And why, you know, part of it is what are we, so, you know, what are the issues that we're saying, hey, let's go out of the box slowly and, you know, after whatever amount of time, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, maybe we open it up then. I think that I'm a little concerned that if we wait that amount of time, we'll be, new TLDs, which I wrote them, I think, will be dead on arrival. You know, if after 3 years they're not growing, then we'll open it up. Why not reverse it? Why not open it up and then penalize the companies that,
yeah.
If there is somebody doing something bad, penalize those people while instead of restricting out the whole class of competition? And that's all.
Okay, we're drawing to a close here. Scott?
Yeah, thanks. It's hard to sort of pull all of this together, but let me make a couple of comments. The percentage models seem to me, they harken back more to SEC and the corporate world for models, for example, in the stock voting context. I think that goes out the window when you have the presence of contracts. So my question would be whether or not those are just an artifice, not even a necessarily a nostalgic throwback. But my question is, when you do have a contract, then it seems it does open things up more. And so if the percentages really are vestiges of voting stock, as all anyone knows, when you have a voting trust, a contract, or a shareholders agreement as a contract, that sort of supersedes all those percentage issues. But my question would be, if people are on this call that have dealt with working under the Moby contract, because that's been trotted out as an example and one we seem to be working from, what has been their experience in terms of things they'd like to see changed in it and entering into the whole new world of non-generic TLDs? Would that change, would they keep the same changes in the contract under a new regime without generic TLDs?
Any of you proposal author types want to take a swing at that?
Yeah, I mean, this is John. Moby, Asia, Tel, none of them have applied to be registrars under their contracts, but they have the right to do so if they wanted to. So, you know, past practice might be hard to answer that question.
So this is Jeff Newman. If I could jump in, there's a reason. Well, first of all, John's right. Nobody's asked to. Now Moby is owned by Afilias, but the problem is that Afilias is, they're a back-end, even when it was .Moby, Afilias was back-end for Moby, but they're also a front-end for other registries. The reason they never applied to be a registrar was that the contract forbade them, their contract for .info forbade them from being a registrar in any other TLD. Right? So even though Afilias was just .info, the front end, they were still not allowed to apply for to be a back end to be a registrar for .Moby or even .biz. Like Neustar is not allowed to be a registrar currently for .com, .net, .org, or any TLD simply by our rules. So we can't really look to say has any registry applied because we've all been prohibited from. So.
Jeff, that's not entirely accurate in that .Moby could have applied, .Tel could have applied, .Asia could have applied, regardless of who they were using as a back-end provider, understanding that Afilias or Neustar couldn't provide or VeriSign couldn't apply, but those entities could have, and they still, other than Moby now that it was purchased by Afilias, they still could.
But those entities were mostly policy boards. I mean, there's a lot.
This, Mikey, I'm going to cut this one off. I'm going to give Ken a minute to get his point in, and then we're going to totally change gears. Ken, go ahead.
Oh, Mikey, my question was addressed there, so I'm still keeping a placeholder for the proposal at the end of the meeting that I have. Thanks, buddy.
Okay. all right. I want to thank all of our pioneering proposal writers and presenters. A comment came up on the chat, and I think Amadeo may have brought it up too, that this is not the end of proposals. The comment then came up on the chat that there should be a deadline, and I agree. Let's have a conversation about on the list about that. I don't think we need to close the doors really fast. I would strongly encourage folks who feel like their proposals are pretty closely aligned to form sub-teams around those and work on them together. And at the same time, I would encourage folks who have presented proposals today to keep an eye on the chat and in the conversation in the transcript for folks who are opposed to their proposal and try and draw them into their groups as well, because what we're really about is trying to arrive at a place that we can walk out ideally with perfect consensus. And so talking amongst ourselves as we agree is good, but we also need to talk across the group to folks with whom we disagree. I want to take 15 minutes, no more, to talk about I'm going to combine the next two agenda items, use cases and analysis options. There was some conversation on chat, and I can't remember if it was private or public, that said we really need to get some of these definitions nailed down, and we really need to do some analysis around some of those basic principles so that we have a shared place to stand when we're reviewing and analyzing these proposals. And at the same time, it seems to me that the use cases conversation, the work that Milton, Mike Pelage, and Avery did, plus the work that Barry did, is another kind of natural subgroup. And so I didn't want to go through the proposals for the various use cases today. I just wanted to try that idea out and see if there was interest in forming such a group and how that might work and what they might do and what our expectations might be of them. So this is a much less structured conversation. There's no pitch. There's no particular idea in mind. I just had this sense in reading the list that along with generating proposals, we also need to generate a structure in which to review them, and wanted to hear your thoughts, either in the phone call or on the chat or on the list or whatever. And with that, I've shot my wad. Does anybody have any thoughts about that? Is that a good idea or a stupid one? And if it's a good one, would at least the four of you be willing to sort of band together to start working on that? wad. W-A-D, wad. Nothing, he said plaintively. I mean, we'll jump the agenda ahead pretty good. Thank you, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I'm just confused. I'm not sure what you're maybe you need to clarify. I'm not really sure what you're asking on this, on what the thoughts were. I read it and I'm still unclear. Maybe I'm just, you know, I'm sick. I can't figure it out, but I'm not sure what the goal of it is and what the takeaway is for that next step.
Well, I mean, I'm inventing as I go here, so this isn't necessarily the best, but my thought was that it may be that we can do everything in the context of proposals, that the proposals themselves could be self-standing and that they would have the definitions that are required, and that we would hammer on agreed definitions to terms like single registrar. You know, there's all that stuff that's in the chat about that. And if that's true, then that's fine. But if not, it seemed like it would be a worthy thing to very quickly get to a shared set of understandings of what those terms mean, because we otherwise run the risk of having proposals that are talking past each other because some of them have one set of definitions and another set has a different set of definitions. And so I just thought it would be perhaps useful to have a group of people that was working on that.
I understand that, and I think the definitions are fairly simple. I think it's how they're applied and how they're used, that's the sort of point of contention. Because registrant is, you know, all these are pretty simple terms, but I think how they're applied in this new world is sort of is more of what the goal would be versus how do we define it. Because I think that's one of the issues is how do we, you know, a single registrant is, it's one single person who's the registrant, and then if they do other things with it, I think is that's how it's applied in this world versus, you know, what is a registrant and what is a one-person registrant. So just to separate that, for the definitions versus the use.
Okay. Roberto?
Yeah. I was thinking that once we have the proposals laid out, I think that we need some sort of mechanism to have a kind of an
objective evaluation of the different characteristics. And I think that this is one of the points that could be done with the talking about use cases and analysis of the proposals. I think that there are, besides the fact that obviously there are some people that have some specific interest in pushing one proposal or the other, I think that we need to set up a sort of an objective assessment and then discuss it in order to come to a consensus.
Thanks, Roberto. That's sort of what I was thinking is that, you know, there's the proposal creation and honing process, and there's the evaluation of the proposals process. And I guess that what I was seeing in the various use cases was a mechanism to do that proposal, reviewing. And so, you know, that's essentially the distinction I wanted to draw. I'm not getting a whole lot of... Oh, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi, Kathy Kleiman. And, Mikey, I actually understand exactly what you're saying, and I see different words being used in different ways, and there's not a consistency, so I would go ahead. I'll volunteer to work on definitions. Not that we'll be spending many sessions working on them. I think having them on paper and then seeing if they make sense across the models would clarify things for a lot of people who are quiet in the background here.
Cool. Jeff is in agreement on that.
Actually, no, I'm sorry. I was trying to raise my hand and I hit the agree. But
okay, so go ahead and talk.
Well, I think a lot of the definitions are crucial to the proposals, and I'm not sure that some of the definitions can be established without looking at the specific proposals. I'm not sure how useful that idea is going to be. I'm going back and forth on it. For example, I saw that people wanted to define vertical integration versus defining cross-ownership. Again, I'm not sure how useful that is. I mean, it's really the proposal that matters, and each proposal will define the terms that are to be used within it. I just can't imagine someone working on definitions without having context. That said, once we do have a definitive proposal, then absolutely we're going to need people to work on those definitions.
And would you also agree that we also need a mechanism to evaluate, right? I think that's really where I'm headed. You know, I don't want to get terribly hung up on definitions.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll need a way to evaluate them. I think we're going to need criteria as opposed to definitions. You know, and some of those criteria may have to do with, you know, ease of implementation or speed or things like that, but I'm not sure. It's hard to talk about in the abstract. I'm kind of like Jeff Eckhouse, kind of not sure if that should be a separate process.
Okay, well, let's see. Brian, you're in the queue next.
Yeah, on 2 points. On the definitional exercise, a point that I made in the charter group, that whoever's working on definitions, to the extent that you can, stay as close to existing contract language or other ICANN documentation about non-discrimination, et cetera, I think the better. I think where anybody working on a proposal who offers a definition and is creating a definition that goes beyond that base of documentation, just please call it out clearly so that we understand that there is a definition creation aspect taking place. I think that would be very useful to the group. And then second point, Mikey, I agree. There has to be an evaluation mechanism. You know, at a minimum, we saw the new proposed Objective 5 language come back down from the council. While it's not... you know, the most definitive and granular of roadmaps, we're still coming back, or need to come back, to at least identifying impacts on competition, impacts on consumers, You know, for example, an earlier discussion point, a lot of folks focused on the 15% of VeriSign ownership of NetSol, and that's not necessarily control. But a simple reminder that it wasn't necessarily just a question of control. That ownership stake created an atmosphere and an environment of distrust that affected competition across the registrars, and so that ultimately we have to come back to those analytical points of impact on competition and consumers if we're going to offer something sound.
So I don't want to belabor this point, and we're getting Kathy, I'm assuming your hand is left up from before.
Yes, that's right.
I think that what I'm hearing is that I've come up with a half-baked idea. I should put it back in the oven and start to firm it up. I would love to have a gaggle of folks chime in the chat, maybe just saying that they would like to help with that, and we'll do a little sub-team stuff on the list that talks a bit about evaluation criteria, definitions, evaluation process, and we'll come back next time with something a little bit more concrete than Mike's arm waving. I hate making stuff up on the fly like that. I think then the last little bit of the agenda was really about tools to help if they're of interest to people who are leading or participating in subgroups. One of the, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this either, but I wanted to let you all know that this is something that we talked a little bit amongst the staff and co-chairs on the last call. Would it be useful, for example, to either have sub-email lists or some sort of threaded conferencing system available so that a proposal could be essentially in its own little environment? Or are you more comfortable just pushing a red line draft back and forth on the list or on a sub? You know, I think one of the things that we probably want to do is keep those conversations transparent somehow so that we can learn from them. And so I am not too keen on the idea of pure sub lists that are, you know, that don't show up anywhere on an email list. But anyway, that we could go off and, for example, set up some sub-email lists for the groups that are forming, or we could explore a conferencing system. And just wanted to let you know that that's available and something that we could work to provide. The other thing that occurred to me was perhaps some sort of mechanism to allow essentially continuous polling so that proposals could be put up somewhere and people could register their support or disagreement so that proposal writers and leaders could find out how they're doing, whether their proposal is gaining support or losing support. Figure out where their proposal needs work in order to gain more support, et cetera. And so I'm curious about whether there's any interest in tools like that. Again, I don't think we need to hammer it out on this very expensive, very time-consuming phone call, but I wanted to let you know that those tools are available and that we would be happy to facilitate their deployment if you want them. That's about it for the agenda, unless there's... Well, Ken has his closing point. Brian, is your hand up left over from before?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No worries. Eckhouse is in the queue. K Ken is in the queue. So this is sort of the last queue before the end of the call. We've got about 15 minutes to wrap up. Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I put this in the chat, and I just, you know, for people, some people might not be on the chat, and I just wanted to say this, that I'd love to, you know, for people who haven't had a chance to read it or who still have additional questions or comments on my proposal, and I'm assuming that John and Jeff Newman have the same thoughts on this, that if you have any, you know, if you have any specific thoughts or comments that you might not want to address to the list and you might want to just address to me on specific questions, a few of you have already done that, then please, I would love to get the feedback. And if you disagree with, especially if you disagree with my proposal or you have concerns, and this, again, this I'm assuming for John and Jeff, please send them to me because I'd love to know what are your concerns about, you know, my specific proposal, what are the issues. You know, Jeff Newman and I have spoken offline, and we've had discussions about what, you know, each other's proposals. But I'd love to hear from the rest of the group what is, you know, any support or issues with my proposal, or any, if you need additional clarification, please let me know. If you, as I said, you don't want to send it to the list, please send it to me directly.
Thanks, Jeff. Ken, you're next.
Thanks, Mikey. I'm going to make a proposal. I know it's very early on. It's tied into a couple of things. It's tied into the fact that we have what I consider to be a somewhat Herculean task ahead of us still. And we have a very, very short time period in which to accomplish something that can be considered by the board to be meaningful and material steps. Yeah. In the past, both with the GTLD working group, and Jeff might be able to give a little more background on the STI, there has been deemed to be the necessity of the possibility of doing a face-to-face coming down towards the very end. Rather than wait until the week before this potential face-to-face might happen, I would like to raise the potential that this may need to come and suggest that we consider the possibility of doing some sort of a global doodle or something like that to find out where it would make sense if we decided that something like this had to happen. Because I see the possibility of 2 days of face-to-face, pounding it out, getting finals, some sort of a final tentative agreement, something that somebody can lift with. I see also now the ICANN technology allows us to do something like this, and I can use Nairobi as a perfect example. There were registries, registrars, people from other constituencies in Washington, D.C., co-participating at the ICANN meeting. So it isn't like somebody would be trapped if they couldn't get there. But I think we have to at least consider this. You can shout me down if you want, but if we get down to the point where it's the 1st of May and we don't have something meaningful out there, I don't want to see that kind of a situation occurring. So for what it's worth, Mikey.
I won't shout you down. I'm looking at the chat. We're getting a lot of great proposals on location. We'll take that one under advisement. And see, I mean, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. We'll see if, A, we need it, and, B, if we do, we'll figure out if we can, and if so, how.
Well, I'd just like to inform everybody that the ice is cleared at McMurdo, so we could work something out down there.
Boy, I talk about a sales pitch. Okay, Gray, you're next.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of support your suggestion about the polling, and I think that it might be helpful for kind of smaller decisions, not like whether or not we should adopt a particular proposal or anything that large, but as people solicit feedback on a particular element of a proposal or a particular, sometimes I find it difficult to, with there's so much traffic on the list, find it difficult to kind of keep up with how many emails go back and forth and which ones are responding to which ones.
Yep.
So for group feedback, an easy polling mechanism for small questions on the proposals that they develop, I think, would be very helpful.
I apologize. John Nevitt's correction is right. I've got so many abbreviations in my head. I was referring to the STI, not the IRT. Thank you, John.
And I think the polling thing is easy for us to do. We'll figure out sort of how people could get access to it. And if people have polls that they want conducted right now, send them to me. Don't send them to the list. Send them to me, and I'll make sure that they get posted with all the due fanfare that they deserve, and then we'll sort of figure out how that works for the rest of the way. Other stuff? Other closing comments? 10 minutes to go, but we can always end early. Just using your plus and minus and your beside your name, is the way that I'm running these meetings okay with you guys? Because if there's anything I can do to make things better or more productive, please let me know, either now or directly by email. We do have a pretty big group and a pretty big job, but I actually think that we're making pretty good progress. I think that the way that we have started coalescing around some discrete proposals is very good. I think the way that we've started to coalesce around some use cases and the beginnings of an evaluation mechanism is good. I don't think that we'll come down to something precise by the 1st of May because we've got an open constituency statement period that's probably just going to be wrapping up right around then. We're going to have to fold that stuff in. But I also think that we're still just fine in terms of getting stuff ready for Brussels. Jeff?
Thanks. The one thing, well, by the way, Mike, you very good job. That was I didn't raise my hand to criticize on that. It was on, I think this was put onto the chat before, and since we're just finishing business, proposals, if there are, do we have, because I remember Jeff Newman in the beginning, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, had said, hey, could we have a two-week deadline for proposals? And I know you had said, hey, a few more weeks for proposals, and granted, I know I'm one who already submitted, so maybe I'm on the other side of the fence here, but I would like to sort of cut this off so at a certain deadline, so people who submit proposals put them in, and, you know, I'd sort of defer to you and the group maybe to set a deadline on that, if possible, on this call.
Yeah, I'm taking that as an action item. I, you know, quite frankly, hadn't thought about it, and rather than making something up, I'd like to think about it when I'm not running a call like this and talk about it with the rest of the gang and see. But
okay, thanks.
Okay, I think, Jeff Newman is raising his hand or checking or...
Yeah, sorry. How do I guess I'll send around, I'll talk to John and Jeff. Maybe we'll form the JJJ subgroup team. Work on our proposal. So I guess I'll just shoot around an email to see if there's interest in forming that subgroup.
I'm okay with it, but we have to have a cooler name than JJJ.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want
J-Cubed. We'll be J-Cubed. So is there a way for us? There a way for us to set up a sub-mailing list or something?
Yeah,
or?
That's exactly what I was going to propose is, Margie, could you or Mike take the action to set up a mailing list for them so that we can have a public archive of the conversation that they have?
Oh, yeah, sure. We can easily do that. We'll, if anyone else wants to join, we probably, you know, just, you'll need to send an email to the list so we can add you to the other list.
Yeah, or send it to either me or Margie. If you want to do it that way.
Mikey, this is Glenn. It'll probably, because I set up the other list, it'll probably be easier if I do it.
Oh, that'd be great.
And then, all of you can send me the name.
Yeah, everybody knows Glenn. Cool. Okay. I think we'll call it a day. I thank you all for, I think, a pretty good call, a very productive conversation. I'm very hopeful that we can move the ball forward. And for those of you who have joined us during a holiday, thank you for that. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Mikey.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.